We know that both the legislature and the judicial branch have their roles to play in civil rights movements. It's very important that we have some wins in the legislature.
What he's really doing, I think, is playing up gay baiting.
It's election year. He's done it before. He'll do it again, no doubt.
I don't think he has a shred of decency in him. He's willing to make political points at the expense of someone's life.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. New Zealand solidifies its queer partner rights, lesbo-gay activists yield to civil unions in Connecticut, and the victim of Kiwi political gay baiting fights back. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 19, 2005. New Zealand's new civil unions for same-gender couples cleared their last legislative hurdle this week. Although those unions were created by a bill passed late last year, it was a companion measure that actually changed a host of existing laws to give them legal standing equivalent to marriage. The Parliament gave final approval to that Relationships Statutory References Bill by a majority of about two-thirds, representing cross-party support by members free to vote their consciences. That bill also provides for similar status for most purposes for cohabiting partners who have not registered a marriage or civil union, but their situation is muddied by the absence of a clear definition of those so-called de facto relationships. Speaking for the Labour government, Associate Justice Minister David Benson Pope declared, "There is no place in New Zealand society for this kind of discrimination. These bills were always about justice and fairness, and Parliament was right to back them." Openly gay Labour MP Tim Barnett, who shepherded the bill, said, "Finally, we are following the rules we set a generation ago. In passing the Civil Union Act and now this relationships bill, we are playing catch-up with the rest of society."
Britain's Labour government also acted this week to put some teeth into its own newly enacted civil partnerships. The budget presented this week includes an assortment of changes to the tax rules to put civil partnerships on the same footing as marriage. These include marital breaks from capital gains and inheritance taxes for asset transfers, gifts and bequests from one partner to the other, for pensions, and for division of property on dissolution. For some couples, the change could mean an added tax burden if they maintain more than one residence or have substantial assets outside the country. And while the national lesbo-gay advocacy group Stonewall hailed the move toward equal treatment, it comes at a time when marriage has already been stripped of most of its tax benefits.
Remarkably, the Roman Catholic Church in South Australia voiced support this week for a state government bill to legally recognize same-gender couples in areas including property, inheritance, pensions, and health care. Archbishop Philip Wilson testified before a state parliamentary committee in favor of that statute amendment relationships bill in order that people can be properly protected in their rights. He said, "We clearly regard marriage as being a unique type of relationship, but at the same time, we recognize the fact that there are people in society who live in other kinds of relationships. It seems to me that it's possible to give same-sex couples rights by defining the terms clearly and making sure we don't use ambiguous terms in legislation." Towards that end, he proposed replacing the bill's domestic partner terminology with spouse for married partners and de facto for other couples. That language change is agreeable to the state lesbo-gay group Let's Get Equal, which hopes it will clear the way for rapid passage. Archbishop Wilson later told ABC Radio,
"They have to recognize the reality of relationships, but we're saying that the categories that we're suggesting are better ways of doing that rather than using the category of domestic partner, which is the one which has been presented in the bill. The Catholic Church believes that people who are in these other sorts of relationships, whether gay and lesbian couples or people who in domestic partnerships, that's people living in a couple relationship and in either married spouses or partners living a de facto relationship, have to be protected by the law of the state."
Archbishop Wilson's move is surprising, since the Vatican has taken very strong positions opposing not only marriage equality, but any marriage-like standing for non-marital relationships.
Anglican bishops of the Episcopal Church USA agreed unanimously this week to hold off until at least mid-2006 from authorizing any public blessings for same-gender couples or consecrating new bishops. They said that moratorium will continue until some new consensus in the Anglican Communion emerges. This was the U.S. branch's strongest gesture yet toward healing its relations with the global communion, since it made openly partnered gay Gene Robinson, Bishop of New Hampshire. They were following a recommendation of the World Church's so-called Windsor Report and of a meeting of its primates, which had chastised the Americans for violating generally accepted church rules. Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, the church's first among equals, welcomed the U.S. move, but Williams this week opted out of a visit to Canada, whose Anglicans have been criticized, along with the Episcopalians, for one diocese's decision to bless gay and lesbian couples. The Canadian church has not yet held a meeting that could respond to the primates, but it's believed that Williams does not wish to be seen as taking sides in the growing schism.
In Israel, there was another great leap forward in the civil status of same-gender couples this week, as Attorney General Menachem Mazuz ordered payment of government survivor benefits to a gay widower. The National Insurance Institute had previously denied Giora Raz's claim for the retirement pension of his late partner of 23 years, Yaakov Lisboder. Raz had quit his own job in 2002 to care for Lisboder, a terminal cancer victim. The Institute went by the letter of the law, which uses gender-specific language. As Raz appealed its ruling to a labor court in Tel Aviv, Mazuz intervened with his official opinion that the purpose of the law is to protect against economic want, not to strengthen marital bonds. That is the reason the benefits are also paid to the survivors of common law relationships. Therefore, the difference between same-sex and common law couples is irrelevant as far as the law is concerned, since the survivor of a same-sex couple may also find himself or herself in a situation of significant economic want compared to the situation he or she was in when his or her partner was alive. The National Lesbo-Gay Group Association for Civil Rights in Israel believes Mazuz's opinion also serves to open a range of other social benefits to same-gender couples, including work accident insurance, disability pensions, and childbirth allowances.
In Saudi Arabia this week, what authorities believe was a gay wedding resulted in mass arrests. A tipster called the security forces to report that at a Jeddah venue used for weddings, an all-male party was dancing and behaving like women. 110 men were arrested, and while most were later released, 30 were formally charged in court. Homosexual acts are criminal under Saudi Arabia's Islamic Sharia law and can result in the death penalty. The men arrested this week were all Saudis, unlike the widely reported raid last year in Medina, in which some of the 50 men arrested at what authorities believed was a gay wedding were from Chad. Also in Saudi Arabia this week, a gay male couple were publicly beheaded in Arar for murdering a Pakistani man who they feared would expose their relationship.
A California judge this week ruled that denying marriage to same-gender couples violates equality guarantees in the state constitution. The decision will be appealed, but it sparked celebrations around the state and reactions across the U.S.
The case before the court, known as Wu et al. Versus Lockyer, is a consolidation of several lawsuits challenging the state's restrictions of marriage to a man and a woman in the wake of San Francisco's licensing of some 4,000 gay and lesbian marriages a year ago. It was brought by Lambda Legal, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of a number of couples denied marriage licenses and two lesbi-gay groups, the Our Families Coalition and Equality California.
San Francisco Superior Court Judge Richard Kramer concluded that no rational basis exists for limiting marriage in this state to opposite-sex partners, striking down the current family law.
To the state's argument on grounds of tradition, Kramer responded, simply put, same-sex marriage cannot be prohibited solely because California has always done so before.
To the argument that marriage is primarily for producing children, Kramer called it an obvious natural and social reality that one does not have to be married to procreate, nor does one have to procreate in order to be married.
And for those who fear that marriage equality for same-gender couples would open the door to legal standing for any conceivable relationship, Kramer wrote that the state could still legitimately regulate marriage, and so the parade of horrible social ills envisioned by the opponents of same-sex marriage is not a necessary result from recognizing that there is a fundamental right to choose who one wants to marry.
To the argument that the state's registered domestic partnerships already bring same-gender couples most of the legal status of marriage, Kramer responded, "The idea that marriage-like rights without marriage is adequate smacks of a concept long rejected by the courts, separate but equal." It seemed to him that, in fact, the state's willingness to go so far in recognizing same-gender couples actually cuts against the existence of a rational government interest for denying marriage to same-gender couples.
And finally, the lawsuit for equal marriage rights in California made reference to past racial segregation. That analogy was carried a step further by one plaintiff in a similar California case, lesbian comic producer and veteran activist Robin Tyler. In a recent interview with the Washington Blade, she said, "We want marriage. That's the front of the bus. The Democrats want to give us civil unions. That's the back of the bus. The Republicans want to give us nothing. That's off the bus. And the far right wants us under the bus."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 19th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Blue charges hurled from out of the blue on the floor of the New Zealand Parliament have given a gay bookstore owner a case of the... No, we won't say it. You'll hear Jim Perrin's story later in the program. Connecticut seems poised to become the second U.S. state to establish civil unions for same-gender couples. Backers of a civil unions bill are predicting its final passage based on strong endorsements from the state legislature's Judiciary Committee and Republican Governor Jody Rell. Whatever the final outcome of the legislation, Connecticut's courts will also be weighing in on the issue in a lawsuit filed by seven gay and lesbian couples who were denied marriage licenses. A coalition backing same-gender marriage in the state originally opposed the civil unions bill, but changed course when supportive legislators promised that they would not abandon the fight for full marriage equality. Scott Harris of the radio program Between the Lines talks with Ann Standback, president of Love Makes a Family, about the shifting debate on the legislation.
The original bill that was raised in the Judiciary Committee and had a public hearing back on February the 7th, I believe, was a bill entitled Marriage Equality. And it was, you know, just a pretty straightforward marriage bill that would allow same-sex couples to have access to all the rights and protections of civil marriage in the state. We had a wonderful public hearing. There actually wasn't a single person on either side, I don't think, said that they would supported civil union, because all the people who were there to speak in favor of the bill supported marriage, and the supporters didn't support civil union because didn't think it was the same as marriage. The opponents said very clearly that they oppose civil union because they do view it as the same as marriage. So it was sort of an ironic situation. The vote that happened in the Judiciary Committee was on an amendment to strip out the marriage language and turn that marriage bill into a bill that allowed for civil unions, very similar to what passed in Vermont 5 years ago. And it did pass overwhelmingly, and I certainly recognize that that is a huge step forward in terms of the support that we have in the Judiciary Committee. But probably from our perspective, what was most heartening about that debate and that vote was, first of all, the very sound defeat of two DOMA amendments, these so-called Defense of Marriage Acts that defines marriages between a man and a woman. By a over 2-to-1 margin, both what they call a statutory DOMA and a constitutional amendment were defeated. And that was great news, and I think shows that Connecticut is really very different from much of the rest of the country, based on what we saw in the last election cycle. But as optimistic as anything we heard that day were the strong statements of support by many of the legislators, many who voted for the civil union bill and one who voted against it, all saying that this is not equal, this is not enough, and that they pledged to stand with us to continue the fight for full equality and for full civil marriage. So after that vote, the Love Makes a Families board met again. We had opposed the civil union legislation, but we decided that we would not stand in the way of this legislation and withdrew our active opposition.
Ann Stanback, what are the essential features in this civil union bill approved by the Judiciary Committee in terms of a partner's ability to make decisions in medical issues or inheritance or other issues that are primarily addressed in marriage?
There are a whole range of things that the civil union bill would cover, things like the automatic right to make medical decisions for your partner or your spouse if they are incapacitated, or to have hospital visitation, the right to a whole range of employment benefits, everything from employee health insurance on one's partner's or spouse's health care plan, to the ability to use family and medical leave to take care of your partner or a family member. There's significant tax benefits, particularly tax benefits that deal with home ownership, inheritance rights, pension rights. Much of this can be covered under federal law, which civil unions don't cover, but there are definitely significant advantages that civil unions will offer.
And Stanback, what's the significance nationally of what it looks like the Connecticut State Legislature is about to do in voting in a civil union bill? Might it mean that Connecticut joins California as the only state where the legislature voted in a civil union bill?
I think it does, and I think that we know that both the legislature and the judicial branch have their roles to play in civil rights movements. And many of the marriage fights that are going forward around the country with the most prospects of success are doing so through the courts. It's very important that we have some wins in the legislature, and I do know that California is moving forward with marriage legislation. I think the fact that Connecticut is doing this, while it's not everything we want and it's not the full equality and protections of marriage, it is an important message, and I think that it is going to be a stepping stone to marriage. As Evan Wolfson, who is one of the leaders of this movement, often says, wins trump losses. And yeah, there were losses in the election of 2004, but there are going to be some significant wins in this next year, and I think that they are going to actually carry much more power than some of these constitutional amendments that were simply reiterating laws that have been passed in state legislatures. I think the future looks optimistic. We can't let down our guard, but we have more and more fair-minded Americans who understand that this is simply a matter of fairness and of civil rights.
Ann Stanback, president of Connecticut's Love Makes a Family, was interviewed by Scott Harris of the radio program Between the Lines. For more information online about Love Makes a Family, you can visit their website at www.lmfct.org. The website for Between the Lines is www.btlonline.org.
Hi, I'm Keith Boykin, author of Beyond the Down Low, Sex, Lies, and Denial in Black America, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
A gay New Zealand bookseller with a libertarian bent is wondering how it all came to this. Chicago-born Jim Perrin found himself being denounced on the floor of Parliament as a pornographer and a pedophile by New Zealand First Party leader Winston Peters. Peters' election year motivation became more evident when he dragged Perrin's acquaintance, ACT Party leader Rodney Hyde, into the fray. This Way Out correspondent Ross Stevenson asked Perrin just what goes on at Aristotle, his Auckland bookstore, why they're saying such terrible things about him, and how the unexpected inquisition has impacted him and his long-term South African-born partner, Sean Okomp.
We sell what we call classical liberal books. That's
right.
That's our we have two main sections at the moment.
Right.
And the classical liberal books are books on economics, political science, philosophy, history. Basically, they're books that advocate market solutions over government central planning, individual rights, social tolerance, government limited to protecting people's rights and not trying to tell people how they live. So basic sort of old liberal values like that.
Right.
And then the probably about 40% of the bookstore is gay literature, novels, fiction, or nonfiction, general selection of gay books, probably the biggest selection in New Zealand.
Now, Jim, of course, the reason why we got onto you was because of what happened in Parliament when Winston Peters raised this issue. One of the things which he raised, which I think probably is the most scurrilous accusation, is concerning the NAMBLA, the American Boy Love Association. The easy question, let's get it out of the way right at the beginning. Have you ever been a member?
No. I have
never.
Not.
Have you ever participated in any of their functions or activities or anything like that?
There was a time they had been meeting at the Gay Community Center in San Francisco.
Right.
And before I went to San Francisco to take over a bookstore, the Gay Community Center closed down due to lack of funds.
Right.
And NAMBLA started meeting at the bookstore.
Right.
I bought this bookstore. They were meeting there. I had never heard of them before. I knew nothing about them.
Right.
I was a bit uncomfortable with some of the things I heard, some of the people. I mean, it was a group with a lot of different people with a lot of different views.
Sure,
so
sure.
It was really hard to pin down any one view. I felt uncomfortable about it. I asked them to find another place for their meetings, and they moved to the public library.
Hmm.
And they were meeting in the San Francisco Public Library.
The book, the magazine or something was on the bookshelf?
They had a newsletter.
Right.
They put out a newsletter.
Right.
It was being sold in the bookstore at the time when I took it over.
Right.
There were two owners. One of the owners said he wanted to keep it on the shelf. I looked at it. There was nothing obscene about it. There was nothing illegal about it. And it was being stocked in other bookstores in the area, including different light books on Castor Street.
Right.
So I said, all right, since they were basically giving me a bookstore because they couldn't run it profitably.
Hmm.
I thought that was, I thought at the time it was a small price to pay. I was wrong because obviously it's been distorted.
It's come back to bite you now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Been distorted
crazy stuff,
completely
yeah.
beyond proportion. And the people who took over the bookstore after me continued to stock it at the request of the previous owner, who
okay.
said that was his condition, and he insisted they keep it too.
You stock any of that in your current
no,
bookshop?
No.
Right.
I never saw that publication before I went to San Francisco, and I never saw it after I left San Francisco.
Right. So the allegation that's been made is really pretty baseless. And the bookshop you're running is not a pawn shop. What was it called today? A pawn bookshop or something?
Yes. Yes, that's what Winston Peters said. What he's really doing, I think, is playing up gay baiting.
Oh, look, it's election year. He's done it before. He'll do it again, no doubt.
Yeah, one kind of bigot is usually another kind of bigot.
Yeah, exactly. Now, just tell us about how you came to New Zealand. You were in South Africa for a while after leaving San Francisco and leaving that bookshop behind. Did you do books in South Africa as well?
I sold some books by mail order. I did some writing. South Africa was it was much cheaper to live there if you could sell an article in
right.
U.S. dollars.
Oh, right, okay.
So it was actually a very, very cheap place
right.
to live.
Right.
And, yeah, I did sell books there. In fact, most a lot of the books in the bookstore we shipped over from South Africa. And I left South Africa because we had a series of criminal armed attacks on our property.
Now, was this to do with you being gay?
No.
This was just
the state of South Africa today.
Okay, right. Because the constitution over there is quite liberal in this respect.
The constitution, which was passed by all the parties,
yes,
before at CODESA, was very good on that.
Right.
The ANC is not as good on it as people think it is.
Oh, okay.
But the constitution was, and the constitution has been very beneficial in some of the rulings that the constitutional court there has made.
Now, so you and your partner look around for a place to get away to from violence and the sort of place South Africa was. New Zealand, of course, has a reputation for welcoming and being ready to accept gay couples, and that's been a part of our immigration law for a while now.
Yes, that's the thing. In fact, as I looked at it, I realized, there's certain limitations because I remember when my partner came home one day after reading about a horrific murder in the newspaper, this woman who was literally, chased down and just shot to death. And he just looked at me and said, where can we go?
Right.
And I had told him that I thought it was so unsafe that we had to start looking into leaving. He was reluctant. His family's there. He was born there. It's his home. His ancestors have lived there for something like 300 years. So he was a bit reluctant. And I looked at it and I realized, well, number one, we can't go any place that doesn't speak English because I don't speak anything but English. And I started looking at what the options were. And New Zealand, if one of us, we could apply as a couple.
Right.
And this, to my knowledge at that time, was the only place I knew where we could go.
Right.
I could go back to the United States, but to do so, I'd have to leave my partner.
Right.
Because the U.S. government says he is not my partner.
That's right. That's difficult.
So I had no, you know, we had no other option, really. I mean, I'm glad about New Zealand other than, for instance, today. But, you know, it really, we were pushed against a wall. And the last time I was shot at, the bullet missed my head by a couple of inches.
At some point, of course, in the application for you coming into the country, there was a bit of a mix-up. Immigration people being what they are, they seem to think that their role in life is to keep people out rather than help them get in. So at some point, you had Rodney Hyde write a letter, and my understanding of it is it was quite simply, you know, have all the procedures been followed? Is this application going right?
Somebody told Rodney that I was having a problem.
Right.
Rodney emailed me and said, I understand that you and Sean are having a problem with immigration.
Right.
Is there anything I can do to help? He didn't know us. We didn't know him.
Right.
As I understand it, he wrote a letter to them saying, had procedure been followed? They wrote back and said, yes. And that was sort of the entire thing. Winston Peters now says that's an endorsement of my visa application. It was a query asking if the proper procedures had been followed, as I understand it. I've never actually seen this letter.
Right. But that's pretty much the extent of it.
That's how it was explained to me at the time, and that's right. How I've always understood it.
Right.
But Mr. Peters isn't interested in the facts.
I guess that your association with the Institute for Liberal Values, of course, is something which would engage Rodney's attention anyway. So he's happy to call you a friend and stick up for you, which is good.
Rodney is the type of guy who I think he sees everybody as his friend.
Okay.
And that's, I think, one of the endearing things about Rodney. And if I am Rodney's friend, I would be honored by that because he is a decent, decent man.
And as for the other protagonist, well,
I don't think he has a shred of decency in him. He's willing to make political points at the expense of someone's life.
That was maligned New Zealand bookstore owner Jim Perrin speaking with This Way Out correspondent Ross Stevenson in Auckland. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Ross Stevenson contributed program material. Thanks also to Scott Harris and Anna Manzo of Between the Lines. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit our website to learn how you can help keep this program on the air. You can also support this program by bidding on some terrific items at an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can now subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, KZYXNZ, Philo Willett, Ukiah, California, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.